Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 91. This is Kevin DeFrango. Beside me is Ken Phillips. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm hanging in there. I feel like it's kind of a weird time we're in right now, Kevin. We've got, like, a lot of weird stories in the news. You notice this?
There is always a lot of weirdness going on, Ken. The world is a weird place, and I'm not sure that we were meant to know all of the news that we know. You know, it really wasn't that long ago that you needed a physical newspaper to get some information.
Right.
That is not necessarily the case anymore.
No.
The computer that we're using to record this show is much smaller than either our Commodore 64. What behemoth of a system do you guys have that?
Oh, we had the, Tandy TRS-80 Cutler computer.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm. Those were cool. I remember playing several games in the basement of our old home on that, learning to program BASIC. Those are fond memories I have with that computer. But, you know, one of the least weird things I feel like we had in the news was this, and I know this wasn't even one of our topics, but this Senator Rand Paul was in an argument with his neighbor over blowing the leaves, I guess, on this property or something. That's like the current story, although the story could change. I'm not sure exactly if that explains it in my mind, because I've never been so annoyed with someone that I've over leaves that I've broken. It seems like six of his ribs at this point.
Yeah, I didn't really follow that story at all, but the fact that I saw that headline was really enough. Like, you really don't need. I didn't need any more information than that. Because it's just like Rand Paul breaks six ribs in argument with neighbor over leaves. Okay, good. Moving along now. Yeah, that's some crazy. But I mean, people argue over some dumb shit, and I would like it was one of those things. I'm like, you're surprised because I guess you just don't think you ever hear that happening with any politician for the most part. But, you know, someone's got to be a bad neighbor.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're not there a lot. I'm surprised that, well, I guess they have to pay for, you know, lawn upkeep.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's like they're.
Oh.
Do they have like dueling lawn. Companies that are like, you know, also in part of this feud. Like, so it sounds like had been neighbors for like 17 years.
Oh, although I do remember one of my buddies saying, oh, I think the strangest thing I found about this story was that Rand Paul cut his own grass.
Oh, really?
I'm just reading somebody else's tweets, so I'm not completely sure if that's the case or not. But that is kind of hilarious if he mows his own lawn. And this is part of the reason this... And good for him if he still mows his own lawn.
Yeah, you wouldn't expect it. I mean, especially since he's probably...
not there a whole lot.
If he has to be in Washington during the week, you know.
Yeah.
At least. Well...
I mean, I know that they get to go back to their constituencies on a fairly regular basis, but... Yeah, you do kind of spend a lot of time away from home.
Yeah, I mean, that is a little bit of a detour from our scheduled topics, but one thing that you know, may or may not be considered weird or surprising, I guess, is some recent news that we had here in Columbus.
Yeah, definitely surprising.
Yeah.
The Columbus Crew, of which I have had season tickets for 7 years. Somewhat new owner, he bought the team in 2013, so he's not really that new of an owner at this point. Kind of like an owner at this juncture.
After 4 years, you settled in from being a new owner into, just being an owner.
Yeah.
Maybe on the new end of being an owner, but, still an owner, and not a new owner anymore.
But he evidently, at least as far as things seem, intentionally bought the Columbus crew to then summarily move them out of the city. At a later juncture.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting to me, and it's you know probably nothing that some people haven't gone over already, but you know he evidently there's a clause in his purchase agreement that he could move them to Austin at any time. He has definitely tried to. At least in some ways, they've tried to engage the local community more, or at least it seemed that way. I can't even say it seemed that way. There were more sponsors recently, and there's a stadium sponsor that hopped on board.
Well, and I think that the sponsors that they've had in the last, you know, since there's been new owner, and they have had... higher fees that they've had to pay in order to become sponsors, at least according to the article I read.
Well, that's kind of a different, a little bit different than that. It's he was charging one fee, or has been charging one fee, and everyone kind of expects them to go up every year. But this year it became prohibitively expensive for some people. Which seems like a very disingenuous way to say that you're not getting enough local support if you double your rates.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to impact things. It's
Yeah, there's inflation and then there's doubling your price. You know, which are two gigantically different things.
And even at that, it seemed like a lot of the sponsors were still able to... I mean, I think Ohio Health... this big sponsor here that was still able to continue sponsoring them, even though they, like you said, ended up having to pay maybe double that they had to the year before. And they've had other sponsors still. But it did seem pretty cynical to me that he paid more than what the team was theoretically worth, I guess. Is that what you got out of this situation? Like when he first purchased the team... It seemed like he, at least the article that I had looked at said that he had overpaid based on the market value for the crew.
Oh, I did not remember that.
Hmm.
I do remember seeing that supposedly local companies had reached out to him and paid him, or were willing to pay him. Well above his purchase price, almost double his purchase price to buy the crew from him.
Oh, okay.
I do remember seeing that one out there. Now, I haven't seen any more information. Like, that seems a little scarce to me on the information front, if that's all I can get out of it.
Wait, this is a recent development that somebody was willing to pay?
No. When they announced that they were... gonna move if they didn't get a downtown stadium to Austin.
Oh yes, did we say that part? That's
no, we still haven't really covered that part.
That's the that's what we're really talking about here. The crew, I guess, joining a list of similar teams in various sports whose owners threatened to move to another city in order to get a new stadium.
And that's the one thing that seems really kind of weird and also more disingenuous about the situation. Buys them at the end of 2013, because I don't think he owned them for the full season. Like, I feel like he came in halfway through, if memory serves. But, whatever the case, the following year, because like he couldn't really enact any changes right then, but he was assessing the situation, and they definitely improved the grounds. They put in a new video board that is way better. granted, the other one had to catch on fire for them to finally replace it.
That's a good reason to replace it, though. I mean, when something catches on fire, that's usually a signal, especially if it's like a piece of electronics. You might want to replace that thing.
Yeah, so, it's not really a good look.
Well, so they did make some improvements.
Yeah, they made some improvements, and I do feel like they brought in a lot of local people. You know, a lot of local stands moved into the stadium. You know, whether it's beer vendors, ice cream with Jenny's Ice Cream.
Well, I believe they're no longer going to be involved because of the cost of, sponsor, you know, being a sponsor there and having your ice cream there. That's what the article was saying. So,
yeah, well, and it's kind of interesting because she's also one of the people trying to help save the crew. The sentiment is going now for a lot of us.
Yes.
There hasn't been any official announcement that the move is happening. It's still technically theoretical.
Right.
All of the evidence seems to point to him really not wanting to be here, however.
So...
Which is what we kind of got sidetracked on. We got sidetracked on the kind of reasons right off the bat instead of the explanation.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking of like the economics of the move. You know, it's kind of unfortunate, and I'm not sure for whatever reason it is expected for a city to pay, you know, in the form of taxes, basically, or you know, additional interest on bonds and things that. They have to support a team by paying for the stadium. And I mean, it seems, I think I've always been in favor of that idea when I was younger, but now I'm not so sure. Like, it seems a little bit weird because at the end of the day, this guy is making money off of the stadium that everyone in the city has paid for. So it seems a little bit like a weird bargain to me.
Well, and that's the other thing that's kind of interesting, because he had said in interviews, or at least one or two statements afterward, about a privately owned, privately owned stadium. So I'm like, well, then that means you have to develop it then. Like, that's your job to go find a site and to build on it. Like, if it's a privately funded one, like, you don't go to the city about that. Like, that's not the definition.
Well, I don't understand that, because if he is, as I understood, I thought he wanted the city to basically, or the people to vote on a funding for a stadium.
Well, no, it wasn't going to be funding. Like, it was more like you were talking about, like, tax breaks. Or even just helping to purchase the land that it would be on.
I see.
Things of that nature rather than actually paying for it. That's the way I understand. But it also doesn't seem like, and again, on the disingenuous part, many of the local people that would be involved in that, be it the mayor and some of the other business guild isn't the right word, but association.
Some business leaders? Or
yeah, business leaders. Say that he hasn't really engaged them at all about, you know, that type of situation.
So it hasn't. So he has not. This is the first they're hearing of it. In other words,
yeah. Like he has not really broached the subject of, you know, helping him out to find a better location for the stadium, and unless they improve the roadways around there, like enlarge them.
I was going to ask you if you had problems with the this current stadium. And, I don't know if there's a problem with the stadium itself, necessarily.
Well, A, that's one kind of interesting thing is he's thinking of not building a stadium much larger than the one that they have. Thinking 20,000 seat stadium.
Mm-hmm. That makes a certain amount of sense, I think.
So, yeah, not looking to be larger. Just looking to be... It's basically... I always think of it as like a high school stadium where it's just aluminum benches pretty much throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that's all that the stadium is. Like, it really is not anything architecturally interesting.
Visually pleasing?
Yeah, not visually pleasing.
Yeah.
You know, they've done their best to try and spruce it up a little bit, but there's only so much you can really do with something that, you know, doesn't really have any structure to it. Like, it doesn't have, you know, even walls to hide the walkways or anything like that. You know, like, you can't really play with that. To try and spiff it up. You know, it's hard to try and spiff it up, in my opinion. But they did kind of, I think they helped widen hallways. Like, they did do some little adjustments to the stadium.
Yeah.
Also, when he came in.
But I believe the thing that you were referring to earlier could be the biggest flaw, at least in my experience, is trying to leave that stadium after a game is, not very much fun.
Tailgate after the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes really long. And that's the problem that that I see there more than anything. Because it is possible that... it is possible... to improve the grounds, improve the situation around the stadium. Heck, I even think if you wanted to build another stadium on that site, if you wanted to, while Crew Stadium is still operating, you could do that.
Hmm.
You'd just be moving the stadium towards 17th Street if you did something theoretically like that. Because it probably would take a little bit longer than one off season to build something like that. Again, even if it's a more modernized 20,000 seat facility, it probably take a good 12 months, I would imagine.
Well, and I think even in a deal with the other side, I think it, that we didn't talk about is that the owner has been talking with Austin. And the people there as well, and apparently...
They seem far more engaged with talking to the mayor down there than the mayor here, which, again, is another thing that seems quite disingenuous, that you're in one place, but you're talking to the other place first.
Yeah.
It still doesn't point to good signs, but it is kind of nice that the Crew is enjoying a rousing postseason here.
Yeah, I think that's probably
time.
A little bittersweet just because, you know, they are doing well here, so it's hard to imagine. And we were able to watch the ending of a very exciting playoff game featuring the Crew, where it went to penalty kicks, and they were able
and canceled OPA number 91 the first time.
Yeah, that was a reason we missed a week there, sorry. But it was a very exciting game, which went down to penalty kicks, and the Crew was able to win. They are having some success this playoff, so that's
very exciting. Well, that was the first round. They won 4-3 on goals in aggregate against the New York City Football Club. So they are in the Eastern Conference Championship against the number one team, Toronto FC. So we shall see if we can beat those damn Canadians in some foosball.
Drive them back to their home in the north.
Yep. Get back up there and play hockey, you bums.
Yeah, play hockey like a real Canadian. What are you trying to play soccer for?
Silly geese. yeah, and it's kind of interesting, too, that the Crew could really take advantage of the fact that one of their star players, Josie Altidore, who played for the United States men's team for... he's been on the men's team for a while now. But he got in a fight in the hallway going back at halftime. Like a jackass, and got a red card for it.
He got into a fight with the other team?
Yeah. I didn't see the incident. Again, this is another one. I didn't see the incident, but I did see the news. So he got tossed for that, and I think is suspended a game. So he's going to miss the first game. And another guy got his second yellow card. So he got two yellow cards in each leg of the semifinal. So he's out for the first game against the Crew here in Columbus.
Hmm.
So that could make things kind of interesting. I mean, the Crew won 4-1 against New York here in Columbus, which was an insurmountable hole for them to get out of. The Crew really could place Toronto in a similar situation, missing a couple of their best players.
Wow. Yes, I guess we'll have to see what happens there. And, so of course, we'll see what happens with the Crew. I know that they had...
So I'll need to publish this before that game.
Yeah, or, spoiler alert, you may have figured it out by now. We don't know, but you may. I guess a sign of good tidings was that they were able to have a Crew rally, I believe, downtown Columbus. Where they had about...
At the State House. They had a couple thousand people there.
Yeah, so people showing their support, showing the community support for the team. So we'll just have to see how things end up going.
Yep, keep up with the hashtag Save the Crew.
yeah, keep
the faith until there's an official word.
Yes. We will let you know if there becomes such a word, but for the moment, we turn to our second topic, Kevin.
Well, we went from sports to, so we did the O, yes. And now we're doing the PA, and it also ties into the knee. So, the PA is the Pittsburgh Steelers, of course.
Yes.
And on their upcoming Thursday night game I believe it's this coming week. Yeah, I really need to get this shit posted. the Steelers will be on NBC taking on the Tennessee Titans. And they are going to be using the Skycam there, which evidently was a hit during New England taking on the Atlanta Falcons.
Mm.
And I'll tell you what, I did tune in into some of this game. Those cameras do such a nice job of kind of washing away any bad weather. Like, there are times where it's raining and you can't really tell that it's raining.
Yeah.
Until you see, like, a puddle come up on the field or something of that nature. So, like, the NFL cameras can hide a lot. So, it was pretty crazy that the fog in this New England Atlanta game was so dense that they couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah, it was pretty hard to see what was going on a lot of the times, especially when they're using, like, the more traditional cameras that are higher up in the stadium looking down, because they were looking through all that fog, you know.
Yeah.
Which there was a ton of fog in this game, which was it was really strange. I almost felt like it sometimes that people were running with the ball and, like, they weren't going to be tackled because nobody, none of the defenders could actually see them through the fog. If you saw the game, you could back me up on this one for yourselves. But being able to use these sky cams, which the ones we're talking about, those cameras that are attached to cables and pulleys that kind of float over the action on the field and look down on the players from above. They said there's actually like the standard height is like about 12 feet above the field.
Correct. And then there's a second camera that's 50, is it 57 feet?
I think they did say 57 feet above the...
Yeah, 57 feet above the ground.
But yeah, at 12 feet, I mean, you're looking at a whole lot less, you're looking through a whole lot less, you know, fog. So obviously it's going to be even clearer, clearer picture in those kind of conditions.
Oh, yeah. So what ended up happening is they were using the standard camera angles during the first half. And then they switched to using the Skycam almost exclusively in the second half. And the people loved it.
Yeah. I mean, it really was interesting. And I think... it looks a lot better because that's, and then, one of the reasons is like you're seeing it from the player's perspective. So,
oh yeah,
I mean, obviously that's going to be better, even though the most of the experience is from, you know,
yeah,
people sitting in the stands.
The traditional camera angle is more of you're watching it from the stands,
right?
Perspective, except a better view.
You know, it makes you wonder if well, I don't know, but it certainly does give you a much better view than what you would get in the stands, or could even hope to get in the stands, because you can never even see that angle from the stands, like direct, unless you're, well, even if you're,
oh,
like,
no, I mean the traditional camera angle,
yeah,
is,
yeah,
even,
yeah,
better than, okay,
it's more of, and I think, you know, this is not a novel idea or anything, but the angle is a lot like the video game angle you get when you're playing football, you know.
Yeah, well, and that was why one person tweeted exactly that. They're like, they took a picture of their TV, or if they're watching on their phone, they just screenshotted it, and then they had a picture of the Madden view below that, and it was the exact same thing. Like, it was crazy. I was just like, oh man, like, I just, because I don't I haven't really played Madden that much. I mean, I know I've played sports games, and football games really haven't changed that much.
Yeah, I was I mean, we probably started playing back in the Tecmo Bowl days, which, come to think of it, was more like the view from the stands, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
But, we may have played, a few games of NFL Blitz at some point. I'm not sure. That was in the arcades when we were, more in our college years, I'd say. But, there's a little bit more of the, you know, what people would think of the Madden view going on in that game. So,
yeah. And, I've at least played with, enough nephews. That I'm used to playing a little Madden, at least.
Yeah, so you're not completely...
I'm not completely out of the loop. But, yeah, I guess I wouldn't really think about it being the Madden view. But, I mean, it is really cool to see it from that perspective. And I guess I wasn't surprised either that they thought the director of NBC, and I guess I could check his name out, Drew Esikoff, that they like the higher-up camera, higher-up Skycam for running plays, because you can see things develop a little bit better, but he likes the lower camera for passing plays because you see more like what the quarterback is seeing. Yeah. Which I thought was like an interesting perspective, and I guess I just off the bat intuitively agree with the thought process.
Yeah. It makes sense that, and then so they end up having to plan out how they're using the cameras based on the you know, down and distance and things like that. So they kind of have to have you know, an understanding of the game situation enough to plan how they're going to be you know, recording it, what they're using, how they're using these cameras. The other thing I thought was interesting is that it was actually a two-person operation to operate one of these cameras, because there's one operator who is just moving the camera, and the other one is, or yeah, one is just moving the camera. The other one is moving the actual unit.
Oh, right.
So it's like they have to work independently together, and like, you know, keep the focus. But they said like if there's a pass play, like they try to like go the same speed as the ball and like kind of follow it as it's going, you know, to the receiver. So like that, and to be able to like, you know, keep your focus and follow the action with the camera and everything at the same time is pretty challenging. So I think that's why they like to just use it for instant replay, mainly, until they're forced to with this fog game. But it's good that they're trying to step it up a little bit and actually go through a game and mainly use that. So
yeah, and it's another one of those ones that I kind of have to laugh. They've toyed with this over the years, but this is still basically a modified XFL idea.
I know. That is so strange.
It is a very improved version of what was happening then.
And one of it's one of the things that's strange about that, Kevin, yes.
I will bring that up until I'm dead. Because, I mean, that really was the camera that's angle why that they were trying to get.
That's why they have that in the NFL, because that was where it was originally, you know, done.
Yeah.
And then they quickly copied that in the NFL with that camera, but just still rarely used it.
Yep. And, yeah, I guess if, you can do a whole half in it, I mean, I'm pretty excited to, watch it, this upcoming Thursday, to be, completely frank with you. Cause I know I didn't think about it too much. I know that I did see some of the second half of that game, so I'm sure I saw some of the Skycam work.
Yeah, I didn't think about it too much either, but I did approve of it when I did see it, and I thought it was a cool way to watch the game. So it was good to see other people agreeing with me, and good to see that the NFL is giving it a go.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that, there aren't a lot of game changers left out there, but something that's, a little more accurate and a little bit better, with, giving you the football view,
well,
would be pretty cool in the, robotics department.
Yeah, speaking of, game changers, Kevin. You mentioned that. We talked before on the show about a artificial intelligence called AlphaGo, developed by Google, which was able to defeat a grandmaster at the game of Go, which
is considered the toughest board game. Not board game is insulting to Go. Because I wouldn't call chess a Yeah, chess is a board game, huh?
I mean, I think you could call it a board game. It is played on a board, so that would seem to be at least a big part of the definition of being a board game. It is a game played on a board, so that's checking off two big boxes in terms of being called a board game.
I suppose my point, which I completely mangled on my own and deserved that beating, was that it's more complex than chess.
Yeah, because...
I think we've covered this, but I think it's always worth covering.
People may be familiar with this game. It's the one with... It's played on a grid with white and dark stones, which are... You're able to place down at any point. And the goal of the game is to encircle your opponent's piece with your own colored pieces. And so you're controlling territory. You have to worry about getting outflanked. Pieces can be placed anywhere on the board, so it's not like you're moving pieces around. But that kind of means that there's not like a natural progression like in checkers, say, when you know you're moving all your pieces forward, that they're starting out from one side and they're going to another side.
Yeah.
Like, your pieces can be placed anywhere on the board, so the game can develop in many different ways. Yeah. Which does make it more complex than chess.
Yeah, and I mean, that's it. Yeah, even with chess, like, the queen really is the only one that can go any direction. But even with that, it's still limited.
She's starting from a certain position and can only make a certain number of moves. From that position.
Yeah.
Whereas in Go, you can put your pieces in any spot to start, as you play for each turn.
So, yeah, like, even the queen is kind of a pansy in the moves department compared to anything that you can roll with Go.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's very much more complicated to try to study from, like, a mathematical perspective.
Right.
Or from, like, a computer programming perspective. So yeah. That's what was so impressive, I guess, about the original AlphaGo, being able to beat a human grandmaster. And that was the first time that had happened.
Well, and it's kind of important to mention, too, that in the AlphaGo original, they taught the computer with information from humans.
Right, they had the records for, hundreds and thousands of human matches that they were able to use to train the program to play Go. So that was a part of its makeup.
Yeah, and the improvement here with AlphaGo Zero was that it completely trained itself.
Yes, they only provided the idea of the black and white pieces and, I guess, the rules of the game, and then allowed the program to
play itself
and figure out the best strategies. So starting from a completely blank slate, this program, it took 3 days to train itself from scratch. And as they put it here, acquire literally thousands of years of human Go knowledge simply by playing itself.
Yeah, so AlphaGo, the original, ends up beating the Grandmaster. And the unfortunate situation when AlphaGo Zero went up against the original AlphaGo was a complete and thorough trouncing.
Yes, the new improved version of the program won 100 games to zero playing the original AlphaGo program. So that seems to be a massive improvement in ability to... in skill, basically, at Go. So that's not great news for humans versus robots, I guess. In humans versus robot news. Although, if you want to think about it, maybe robots are just tools of humans, so that's still humans versus humans, in a way.
Yeah, and it's still... because, and they even kind of acknowledge it in the article, that it still is something of a limited situation that they're dealing, that the computer is trying to learn from. Like, that there's a lot more to learn from human interaction than there is even from a Go game.
Oh, right. Well, yes, exactly, because...
You know, because there is, like, a definite... There's a definite standard for parameters for a game, but there are not for human interaction.
Yeah, I mean, you're given perfect knowledge in Go. Like, you know every aspect of anything that's important with a simple set of rules. But for something more complex, like, you know, human communication, like you said, or human interaction, like, there's all kinds of nuances and things beyond, you know, even just the spoken, you know, communication. So it there's a lot of, in the real world, I guess, outside of the area of games, it's a lot more to try to figure out. And I think we're, you know, seeing things like that too with the difficulties they're having with some of the self-driving cars and things, but it is tougher once you get out in the real world. I mean, these problems too can be overcome. So,
well, I guess the one thing I'd be interested if the AlphaGo Zero could actually be a teacher, so that people can kind of figure out how it's breaking down strategy to help improve the human game.
That would be interesting, because part of the weirdness of machine learning that maybe we talked about before is that the programmers themselves don't actually know how the computer or how the program is working. It basically tries different things out and then back propagates those results to try to improve the results next time. But it's doing that all itself. So it's like, it's changing its own settings in a way, which is so they provide the rules and sort of the algorithm in order to improve itself, and then it just kind of goes out and does it. But for a person to actually try to change all of these thousands and thousands of different weights and settings that can be changed to interpret the input that it receives would be impossible. So, like, the people don't actually know precisely how it all works. It's too complicated for that. The program has to kind of program itself in a way. Which, you know, sounds scary when you say it out loud, I guess. But as long as...
I mean, it's kind of cool. Like, I do think that it could be something that, in a lot... The blank slate learning thing is just kind of interesting to me, just in general. Because I guess it does make sense that if you could program something, you could learn more. Like, by having it start from scratch rather than starting from human ideas. Like, because that there's some type of interference in there that can be wiped away if you can figure out a program to kind of work on try to solve a problem. You know, again, like, it's more of a limited kind of a situation, but yeah, I think it's just kind of that aspect is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, it's what they called a holy shit moment, comparable to like Watson winning at Jeopardy or Deep Blue beating Kasparov, I guess.
Yes.
In chess, or the example from last year of AlphaGo beating, oh gosh, I don't have his name here. Lee Sedol.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Getting crushed by AlphaGo.
Yes, he was the Go master who was
beating. Grandmaster.
Yes, of course.
He is grand.
Don't want Phillips. To drop the grand from his title. Now, that would be insulting, Kevin. You know, if one of us is going to insult Go. It's going to be me, damn it.
Since we're on the topic of technology these days.
Yeah, speaking of technology, this one was an interesting advancement, I thought, in more of like the standard robotic sort of area, as opposed to artificial intelligence.
Correct.
Some of the robots we've had on this show have been of the bigger variety. We talked about some of the Boston Dynamics robots.
Climbing and
some of their
rolling.
Nightmarish creations, like the dog robot.
I forgot about the Japanese dog robots.
Oh yeah,
that we talked about them too. That people were keeping alive even though they stopped making them like a decade ago.
Oh well, we may have to do a future topic because I did see that they are bringing them back.
Oh my gosh. I did not see that, but that is outstanding.
Yeah, I don't want to get into it now, but we can talk about that for sure later. This is a much smaller robot of the almost insect variety.
It weighs less than a penny, is how to put this into perspective. And the fact that something that weighs that little can be considered a robot is a little bit mind-blowing for yours truly. Like, that is tiny.
Mm-hmm.
But it did make some sense that the experiment here was to get a robot to go from water to flight.
Yes, so this example that they show in this video that accompanies the article is the little robot that is basically the size of a dragonfly, maybe smaller, starting out in a glass of water and swimming up to the top of the glass, and then basically hopping out and flying away into the air. So it is a... water to air transition that this robot is capable of making.
Which was the really interesting thing to me in this article was how you know, the rates that they had to swim or to maneuver the oscillate, maybe is probably a good word. The wings was much slower in water.
Flap, maybe?
Flap?
Yeah, you flap your wings.
You didn't like oscillate? I thought that the 10-cent word would work. I thought I'd get impressed by that.
Yeah, oscillate, I guess that works. They have to be able to move the wing at a slower speed in the water to be able to swim, in effect, I guess.
So, the biggest problem was trying to go from the transition from swimming to flight.
Yeah, and there's a whole lot of different, like, water is very much different for something that is this small. Like, I think I've seen flies or other little bugs land in water and get stuck, basically, without being able to escape.
And it's because they can't release from the surface tension.
Yeah, as they say in this article, for such a small robot, swimming in water is like swimming in molasses, and breaking through the water surface is akin to breaking through a brick wall. So the surface tension is very strong relative to their mass and size there. I think we should point out, you said it's actually 1/15 the weight of a penny.
Oh.
So,
yeah.
This is a very tiny little robot. And I think maybe part of the, that is really not discussed here, is it looks like there is a trailing cord that's coming off of this robot, which I think must house the either the power supply or the computer that is controlling the behavior of the thing.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering, because they didn't really get into that in this article, of how they made it that light.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just because to create locomotion at any level, you need a power source.
Yes. So I don't know if the power source is actually inside that robot, or if it is at the other end of that little cord that you can kind of see in the video.
Yeah.
But it's still impressive. As we said, it can fly or swim, you know, through the water. And then you might wonder, how does it actually get into the air? And I think this is probably the most ingenious part for me.
Then it actually takes on water. There's a water ballast to help it break the surface tension.
So it brings water into a little container that it has inside of itself, and it will then, through electrolysis, break the water down into hydrogen and oxygen, which will make it lighter than the surrounding water and give it buoyancy. And then it can ignite that hydrogen to give itself a little pop out of the water and be able to flap its wings and start flying in the air. So it is highly imaginative, I would say.
That is some smart people coming up with that.
But I would say it's a more of a proof of concept at this point. In terms of, I don't think you guys have to worry about robotic bees coming after you or something next week. It does seem like they have to have an external power source, because any kind of battery would weigh a lot, I think.
Oh, yeah, that
throw things off.
Again, since they don't get into that, I don't really feel like I can speculate on that. But I was thinking, I'm like, how do you get an engine on that type of device? But yeah, it's just powered by something, and I do agree with you, because it looks like they're copper. It's copper cords that it's connected to.
Yeah, really thin cords, because, I mean, they would want to try to keep that as lightweight as possible, too, I imagine. But
right,
you can still see them. They weren't fooling us. but, yeah, just kidding. It was still pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's really badass.
And it's worth checking out the article in the video that goes along with this one.
Yeah, I might go ahead and post the video at the top of our page. Or at the top of the article here. But it's really pretty neat, this tiny little machine.
Yeah, and I don't know if we're going to have that anytime soon, but that would be quite the way to put a little, if you could put a little camera on something like that and have it flying around, that'd be pretty badass. Or if they ever have a toy version of it, that would be pretty badass too. I would go for either entertainment or espionage, the two E's in my book.
Yeah, I get too lazy. I just watch it pop out of water and be done with it. Okay, that was fun.
And on to the next thing.
I mean, they're so tiny, they can't cost that much, right?
I don't know. It might be more expensive than you think. That'd be great if they could keep the price down.
Yeah, I'm just saying they need to keep the price down.
You hear that, guys? Keep that price down.
This leads us to the Belltime Beer of the Week, I guess. I think that...
Speaking of moving on, we're moving on to the Beer of the Week.
Moving on to the Beer of the Week.
What are we drinking this week, Kevin?
Land Grant Brewing's Caber, which is a bourbon barrel-aged wee heavy. And it is 8.7% alcohol. They do not list an IBU on their can. But I will admit that I have been thirsty for a good solid 25 minutes. Because this got drank quickly. I do like the kind of malty beers a lot. Mm. And wee heavies tend to be very malty.
I was going to say, it doesn't taste particularly bitter. You definitely pick up a lot of the malt flavor. And I have been nursing mine a little bit more than yourself. So I think I'm perhaps less thirsty, but I'm definitely still somewhat thirsty from this beverage, although I have been enjoying it. So you can pick up the malty flavors and the barrel agedness from it as well.
Yeah, and this was worked at their third anniversary party, and this was their specialty can on sale, or one of the two. There was a double IPA that was on sale also, Neutron, I believe. Yeah, this was definitely there just for the anniversary, and yeah, this is the first time I tasted it, and it's very good.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, definite thumbs up. So, for at Stunt Granny, this is at DeFrango11, that's at Goes for 33. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to this podcast. Have a good night.
See ya.